In this episode of the Rookie Investor Podcast, we are going to give powerful summaries of some of the best investing books ever. Gareth, it can be really overwhelming to sit down and try and read a book that's 8,000 pages long on value investing.
I've seen some of the books you've read on investing, and it's...
Mate, some of them, I lose the will to live when reading. I'm just like, no, unsubscribe.
I think it's the hard thing in a technical profession or a technical hobby. It's very hard to make it interesting. And
it is.
There is a couple out there where they've done it very well. And I think there's one on your list that you're going to talk about, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, which a lot of people may know, but we'll get into that at the time. I think that's done very well. But man, oh man, I've flicked through some of the books you've had, and it's serious.
Some are heavy.
It's like you need a maths master's. You need a PhD in maths to figure out the kind of things that are going on.
Yeah.
But... you know, we're all about education. So what we want to do is we want to cover some of the best books that we've read, mostly Phil, actually pretty much all Phil, but still, hopefully to give you guys some inspiration, give you a good few tips of things that you can pick up, audiobooks, whatever it is, and start learning, because the more you're doing that, the more you're going to understand the market. And even though these books can be a bit heavy at times, get through them, you'll always learn something. That's my view. Even a book where you're thinking, oh, I can't really get through this, you get to the end of it and you go, oh yeah, actually that was a really good point that they made about some aspect of investing. So let's dive straight in. The first one you've chosen, Phil, is Intelligent Investor.
Yeah, so this is probably probably the pinnacle of investing books. You see it brought up all the time. It's done by Benjamin Graham, who eventually employed Warren Buffett, mentored him, and then they kind of went separate ways. So it's almost the Bible of investing. A lot of people refer to it as that. It's pretty thick, it's pretty small writing, and it's pretty damn detailed.
I hate when they do that.
It is. It's a savage read.
So, okay. So, is it then about value investing?
It's very much
or
about that.
Variety of value
that
investing.
Value investing, as well as that diversifying over the long period, that classic kind of investing.
Okay.
Sort of approach, but in more detail, Benjamin Graham's investing style was finding what they call cigar butt stocks. So companies that had gone well out of favor and purchasing them and then turning around.
Sure.
So, we look at something called intrinsic value. That's where you actually have assets in the company, something that's got value in it. And generally the way you calculate that is assets minus liability, and what's left is what's called your intrinsic value, because that's the actual value in the company. So anything that's trading below that is said to be, of value. So if a company's, it's got a market capitalization of $1 million, but it's got assets of $2 million, then it's undervalued by 50%.
Sure.
So worst case scenario, they sell everything and they get $2 million to distribute and they have money left over.
Sure.
That's, basic way of...
And that's so this book, was this written before Warren Buffett became, I'm going to get this right, the Oracle of Omaha? I got picked up last time for saying the Omaha of Idaho, I think it was.
Idaho.
Which is completely, is this an early Graham book? It's
early. The only other one before this was called Security Analysis, which I think is very expensive to buy. I looked to buy that. And that's up there with $70, $80, $90 book.
Yeah, okay.
And it looks even more tedious than this one.
Yeah, it sounds boring, to be honest. At least the Intelligent Investor sounds a bit more accessible. As a normal reader, is it an accessible book? Is this one you can pick up? And sure, there's always going to be hard bits. Investing, you need a bit of technical now in it. But yeah, can you pick it up and go, okay, I'm sort of getting
I wouldn't start with it.
Okay.
I'd go intermediate. Like, it's good when you go through it. And I haven't read it from start to finish. I kind of cherry-picked certain areas. And if I need to learn more about that, I sort of do. But it's a difficult read. And if you're starting out and you're all keen and you're excited and you come across this book and you'll give up because you're like, fuck, it's too hard.
Yeah.
I don't understand. This is really technical. So it's kind of one of those books that you sort of graduate to.
Yeah.
And I've only read it sort of in the last 3 years myself. So it's,
Sure.
Not something you start with, but the
it's definitely,
point of it is very...
Yeah. It's the, as you said, the Bible. It's one of the top books that's referenced across the investing world.
Across everywhere, yeah.
Yep. Okay. Yep. That's a good one. No, that's an interesting one. Doesn't sound like I'm particularly going to read it. I've actually got one on top of that I might add at the end once we go through it all. But yeah, the next one, this sounds exciting, is One Up on Wall Street.
It's probably one of my favorite investing books. Peter Lynch, fund manager, I think he averaged...
Oh, it's Peter Lynch, yeah.
Yeah, something like 29%, or in the 20%, so over a long period of time, including the period of the crash in 87.
Yeah.
And he still pulled over 20% per year from his fund management.
He's a bit of another one of these geniuses, isn't he?
Like he's pretty
gurus in investing, yeah.
Yeah, so he's got two-tier sort of approach. One of them's just sort of paying attention, like not looking at the data or anything, but just paying attention around what happens in your world before it kind of gets reported. An example we do is, shopping for shares. We just walk around, have a look, see what the vibe is, see how many people are in this shop, how many people aren't. Is something growing? Are you seeing products pop up more? Are you seeing them, what that kind of trend is? And the point of that is, if you're seeing more and more people in a specific store, like JB Hi-Fi, for example, you see a lot of people in there, a lot of transactions being made, you're seeing that data before it's then translated back to the head office, before it's then translated back to whatever analyst, and then before it's translated back into the media.
Yeah.
You're able to get on the front foot in terms of that sort of early investigation.
Yeah, okay. And so that's a lot of what that's about. When he talks about one up on Wall Street, it's basically saying, walk around, you can get the information before it gets delivered out onto the sort of standard platform, so to speak.
Yeah, and that's the first part. The other one he kind of blends to, he blends sort of value investing with growth investing, like paying for growth at a reasonable price.
Yeah.
And that's where that whole price-to-earnings ratio and the growth rate kind of comes together. So you want the price-to-earnings ratio to be around about half the growth rate, or the growth rate to be double the price-to-earnings ratio. So example, if the company's growing at 20% per year, you want the price-to-earnings ratio to be about 10.
Yeah.
And that's said to be a fair kind of value.
Interesting. Is that something that we teach in the masterclass in terms of that process?
Yeah, that's one of the things in there.
Yeah,
it's one of the elements that you look for in terms of the stocks. And because, it's hard to compare the two. Like, you might have Google that's 110% growth, and if it's 55 price to earnings, then that's probably a fair kind of transaction. Whereas if you try and compare that to other stocks, it seems too high.
Yeah.
But, he's kind of come up with that sort of mix.
That's quite good. Yeah, so it's a comparative assessment depending on the stock. Yeah, okay, that's quite a good one. And so the next one is a random walk down Wall Street, which is...
No, this is completely separate. It's probably second to Intelligent Investing in terms of most popular investing books.
Yeah, sure.
And it's pretty basic and not something I subscribe to too much, because what it talks about is efficient market theory.
Okay.
So it says that markets are always efficient and stocks are always valued.
It's been proven wrong enough times now for people to go... It doesn't actually work like that.
Well, anyway. Well, it's still the main line that professionals throw out, Wall Street throw out.
Yeah, right.
These guys on TV jump on and talk about efficient market theory. And it works in the sense if these were commodities, because commodities are always valued at the price someone was willing to pay for.
True.
Something like eBay. If you're selling something on eBay and you're listing it for $100, but someone bought it for $70, it is only worth $70 because
that's what someone paid. True.
But companies have intrinsic value behind it. So people might be caught up in the hype and they might be selling a company even though that company's got $1 billion worth of assets, and people just fear the market. So the whole notion, I believe, of efficient market theory is incorrect because people are too emotional. And people are what changes the market. That's what goes up and down.
That's exactly what I was going to say. It discounts the human emotions that take part in anything. And particularly if you've got somebody who's shifting large amounts of money in an investment, there's huge emotion tied in with that. So that's, to me, the fundamental problem, this idea that we're all robots and what people pay is what people pay. But it doesn't actually work like that. And that's why there's things like value investing and growth investing, because there's opportunities in the market.
Yeah.
That exists because there's a miscorrelation between what people think it's worth or was worth at the time and the actual value of the company. So interesting. So is this one kind of an early starter one, do you think? Or
A lot of people sort of go to it. It's good to get a perspective on what the standard is and what the status quo is. But I don't particularly subscribe to it because it just doesn't make sense. But there's people that are diehard fans that swear by it, that say you're an idiot if you believe in anything else.
Okay.
That efficient market theory works. You should just diversify, invest in an index, and you'll do okay.
Yeah, okay. And that would suit, I get it in a way for people reading that. It would suit a lot of people as well because you're actually taking away the kind of work in some respects. If you're saying... hey, I'm just going to get an ETF for the, you know, I'm just going to let the market decide, then you're kind of putting your hands back and going, yeah, look, I'll put my money in. Whatever comes out with is the best way that it can come out with. But of course, we know that's not true. There is opportunities if you do your analysis and do your homework and you begin to understand the market, much like what you've spoken about looking around, seeing what's happening out there. There's much greater opportunity for growth at a much quicker period than it is just to say, hey, put your money into the market, I'll let the market decide. So, I think it is worth knowing that. And I think that's probably a real beginner's investor book to just get an understanding.
It's not a bad read. It's got some good stories in there.
Yeah.
And even talking about it's a crazy example. I forget the specific part of it, but it's kind of equivalent to Bitcoin. How people just get overexcited, value inflates, and they go through and they give examples of that happening over the last 100 years.
Yeah, okay.
And you can see the trend happening, and it'll happen again. That won't be the last time that happens. But it brings up a bigger debate about beating the market, I think. Which, stats say that you can. They say 95-96% of fund managers can't beat the market, which means 4% can.
Yeah.
And 4% is still a reasonable number out of the thousands
in the total
of the world.
Yeah.
And they haven't just done it once. They've done it consistently over a period of time. But the issue is beating it in today's market is hard because there's so much pressure on a fund manager to perform that they've only got a short period of time to try and do that. Whereas when Warren Buffett and Peter Lynch and these guys outperformed the market, there wasn't social media or there weren't newspapers.
Yep.
Oh, there were newspapers, but there weren't online papers.
No.
Showing the world that you've
It wasn't instant information that, you know, oh, they've lost money in this and everything's blown about a proportion. Yeah, that's
so
really
they
important.
Have that time. By the time Buffett made his billions, like he doesn't have to answer to anyone. If he doesn't outperform the market or like, you know, Berkshire Hathaway hasn't done that for the last 10 years.
No.
He doesn't have to answer to anyone. His reputation's not on the line for that last 10 years.
That's right.
Whereas these other guys have got to try and act, you know, beat the market, but in a short period, which makes it really hard. And the other challenge with that is they're also dealing with a lot of money. So for the average investor, one, we don't have to prove ourselves to anyone.
Nope.
We can beat the market and do whatever the hell we please. Two, we're trading with and investing with smaller amounts. So these guys, if they see Apple going to shit, they've got to offload tens of millions, even hundreds of millions worth of stock, which means they've got to find people that have hundreds of millions of dollars to buy it. So if all fund managers are trained and got the same MBA and they're all doing the same analysis, then that means that they've got to somehow try and find other people / everyday investors to sell the stocks to, which means their analysis might be spot on, but they have to cop that loss as the money goes down and
gradually. No, good point.
Whereas you and I, if we've got $5,000 worth of Apple stock and we see it going for shit, we'll sell that in about 3 seconds.
Well, absolutely, that's right. We've got the ability to move, and that is a great thing about investing on your own and not going through companies, because it gives you that power to be in control. And that's the key thing in markets, absolutely. If you're reliant on a third party to do that for you, it may not happen. You may end up losing a lot more. So yeah, no, that's a really good point. That's an interesting one. I would probably have a look at that just as a kind of a general one. And the next one, the Warren Buffett way. And we've also spoken about the Charlie Munger way.
Charlie Munger.
So, is this the ones where they're sort of like tidbits from the knowledge of the person? Is that how that works? Is that what this is? It's sort of the quotes and sort of stories around the person?
Yeah, it's someone who's kind of analysed what they've done and gone sort of way back. And I've read, I'd have to say, I reckon about 80% of Warren Buffett books, because there is an endless amount of Warren Buffett books on there. And they all kind of add a piece to the puzzle. There's no one book that does it comprehensively.
Yeah.
Although I think this one's probably the best one, because it goes back and talks about how he originally started and how he originally made money.
Yeah, right.
And it's a lot different to the value investing sort of approach that he does now.
So how did he originally make money?
So what he'd do is he'd find companies, he'd apply the Benjamin Graham method of finding companies that were below intrinsic value and 65% of intrinsic value. So again, if a stock was trading at a dollar, a company was worth a dollar and it was trading at 65 cents, then he'd buy in through his analysis. And then what he'd do is he'd get a seat on the board and then he'd sell the assets and liquidate the company, knowing that you'd make money because the assets are worth more than what you pay.
I see.
So if there's $1 worth of, if the company's worth a dollar and he's buying it for 65 cents.
Yeah, right.
In a basic sense, you close down the company, you sell it and you get a dollar.
Yeah.
That's how it works. So you used to do that.
But that's, We did that really good podcast about movies.
Yeah,
and we were talking about wasn't The Color of Money. I can't remember the name of the movie. Yeah, that's like a vulture. That's like vultures coming in.
Yeah,
and basically picking up. Really, is that where Warren Buffett started?
That's how he did it. Yeah. Either that, or he'd want control to turn the company around.
Yeah,
yeah, kind of really good business.
And I get that, and that's his style now, is obviously to get control of the board. And there's another guy that does that.
He just kept buying stocks until he had control of the board.
Yeah, right.
And then he'd sell, knowing that the liquidation value would give him a massive return.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah. Can you still do that? Is it possible to do that now, or is there more restrictions in place?
I don't know.
It seems to be like a real 70s, 80s thing.
You need some coin.
Well, that's the problem, maybe. Yeah, I don't know.
Imagine jumping on AMP right now and trying to get 51% ownership. You need like,
I know.
$5-6 billion.
It's like, I think you've said in there's a blog post we're gonna be pushing out soon, and you talk about like saying, you know, if you buy stocks, you're buying the company. So yeah, sure, you could buy Apple, but it's gonna cost you $750 billion.
Yeah.
So it's like, yeah, that's right. It's like, but that's. Just to go off slightly on that, is that a strategy that smaller time investors could do if they group together? Like, if you had a company that was worth, say, 10 million, you'd need a lot of money to make it work. Okay, you wouldn't. What I'm trying to figure out is whether that's a strategy you could do now. Like, if you got 100 people together and they all put in whatever they put in, and you said, right, we've done the analysis work. Here's what the company's worth. Here's what their market cap is. It's actually a bit of a difference there. We've got an opportunity. You buy it up. You buy up the company, and then you sell off all the assets.
Yeah.
And so everyone in that party then gets a return back. I suppose it's not going to be as significant as what he was doing, because when Warren was doing it, it was just him solely was buying the company, so he'd get all of that money back as a return.
But, yeah, and sometimes he'd raise funds to sort of do that.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's a legitimate investment strategy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah, no, interesting. I mean, hard to do now, but still, that sounds like a really good book, actually. I think that's probably one that I definitely would read.
And then it blends in a whole heap of other stuff. Like, we think he's a value investor, but I can't remember if it was this one or the Charlie Munger one where they talk about the fact that they overpaid for Coca-Cola. Munger said, you know, companies are worth paying a premium for, good companies.
Yep.
So it doesn't matter if they don't fit your 60% of intrintsic value.
Yeah, right.
If a company's got a strong enough brand or a moat, as he called it, and they're going to bring in premiums and dividends and growth, then it's worth paying this amount for the long run.
And you see, that's the Warren Buffett way sounds really interesting, because it's already blown a couple of myths around Warren Buffett. We assume he's this value investor. This is just all he's done. You know, he's taken 20 years to do this, that, and the other.
Yeah.
But there's this other side to him. As you'd expect of a normal human being, you're trying out different investing types. So he was obviously quite a different investor early on, and then came about to this sort of method of investing.
Well, even now, I don't know how he ran numbers and found Apple to be undervalued when he bought in.
Yeah, true.
Like, I don't think that was undervalued. I think that was another Coca-Cola play. Where he's just like, this is worth paying.
I think he's coming on board late in that particular scene. Although obviously I think what he says is if he doesn't understand the company, he's not going to invest in the company.
Yeah.
And I think, we've spoken before about it, but yeah, he's understanding not so much the products, but it's the add-ons, it's the iTunes. So it's all of the other things that actually begin to add up. Absolutely. And that's the money-making machine. It's the people having to pay to download stuff and paying monthly subscriptions to different things. It's Apple TV. It's all these little things that click together, and suddenly you've got a huge amount of money going on board. And I think that is the right. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And it's easy. It's small amounts of money, but everyone's happy to pay them, and it begins to add up. Randomly, I remember watching it was a friend of a friend was on Shark Tank in the UK, which is Dragon's Den.
Yeah.
And he had teddy bear that had a little video screen in it, basically.
Yeah.
And it played like kids programs, and it was really interesting. So the Shark Tank guys were like, yeah, okay, that's like, you know, Duncan Ballantyne, who's like a Scottish guy, was like, oh, I wouldn't want that, because it would take away from me reading books to my kids. So it was a video screen that would play books and play movies and do all this kind of thing.
That's interesting.
But the Shark Tanks were like, oh, we're not really interested in your product. What we're interested in is the fact that you've got this other model, which is people need to buy the things to download them to get onto your product. That's the money maker. Do you see what I mean? It was really interesting. It's the shovels idea, you know. You sell shovels to the miners. Yeah, that's right. And so they were like, that's what we love. It's the iTunes thing of, we're not interested in the fact there's an iPod. What we love is the fact somebody has to buy music through iTunes to get onto the iPod. I thought, yeah, that's a really interesting way to look at it. Absolutely, that's a really good model. And if businesses are doing that, it's worth looking at them. So the Warren Buffett way is one I definitely would like to look at. The next one, we both know, Rich Dad, Poor Dad.
Yeah.
Which is now a bit of a modern Bible of...
just life.
Just life. I was going to say, yeah, it's more than investing. It's making money. It's financial education. Yeah.
It just breaks down the barriers so well. Like even... I can't remember if it was in this one because it's been a while since I read it, but even talking about some of his friends were academics and they went and studied, journalism and they're well-written and, they can't get a best-selling book. Whereas he's got this thing that's got poor grammar. Weirdly written.
I think it is Rich Dad Poor Dad. That's right. I think it is. It's not written particularly well. It's like banged out, but it's this.
And he says it's called best selling author, not best written author.
Yes.
It's best selling.
That's right. That's right.
Like changing the mindset there. But his whole thing is he's quadrant of, going from an employee to self-employed to a business owner to an investor, going through each one of those models. And you don't really visualize that. I didn't visualize that beforehand. An employee trading time for money. Working for yourself, you're still doing that exchange, but you've maybe got a bit more flexibility, particularly in Australia. Running a business, you're putting a system in place and getting other people to take care of that for you. And then investor is where you should be playing, is other people are coming up with a system and running it for you. And that's where sharks play. That's the pinnacle. Once you start getting into the angel investing and venture capital, that's where you make serious money. And the example I use with that is, you have a look at Peter Thiel, co-founder of PayPal. He started that business, that system, $55 million on exit, which is pretty decent. But he went into Facebook as an angel investor or early VC, $500,000, exited for $1 billion. So they talk about playing at that extremely high level kind of game. Which you don't really get exposure to. Then, of course, using your funds to purchase assets, income-producing assets.
He's big into that,
So if you are an employee, which is fine, it's about using that to then buy assets rather than liabilities. And then the income from your assets is what funds your lifestyle, which is Grant Cardone subscribes to that massively.
Absolutely. He's not so big into investing in the sense that, gold is his big thing. And he always talks about this story about being in Vietnam, Robert Kiyosaki, and seeing gold, this gold bar. And it was before the gold was de-linked from the US economy, whatever that's called. But his approach is really interesting. And I do say, you're right, it's a bigger picture. It's not about investing, but what it is about is managing your money to benefit you. And I think in investing, that's exactly what this is all about. That's what Cheeky Investor is about. It's about getting people to use their money to benefit them. And that could be an awesome holiday once or twice a year. It could be buying a new house. It could be saving so your kids can go to college, whatever. Like, that's the idea. And I think that's what I love about his style. And the way he presents is very easy. As you said, it's so easy to understand. It's so good. The story, I don't know if it's true. I assume it is, of the Rich Dad and the Poor Dad.
You've heard different things, like it's made up or...
I don't really care. Like, do you know, the way it's done, the way it's such a good sort of allegory.
It's funny to do a deep dive on what whether he's an investor or what his approach is, because he talks about real estate, because you can obviously get income from real estate. But I mean, this guy's essentially gone from no one to writing this best-selling book. Like, he wasn't known really before this book. So his income's actually royalties from books. He's probably got about a dozen now. And
Tim Ferriss.
And recently his partnerships. Like, you see people partner with him to do e-commerce websites.
And Signal and things like that. That's right. He's jumped on this whole... Yeah, you're right.
So he's created a massive... Yeah. I don't know.
He's a brand, detail of, I think.
I don't know the details of his investments. But Tim Ferriss, you said the same. He got there with 4-Hour Workweek, but he was an early investor in like Facebook and Twitter. So he went straight to that venture capital or angel investing game.
Yeah, because he was a business owner struggling, or at least that's his story, which I think was right. Yeah. He was selling like...
Maybe we need a good book. That's what we need.
We've spoken about this, and you're going to do it this year. This is the bloody plan this year, mate.
Someone come up with a title for us.
After this, because someone come up with a title.
And we'll give you $20 like they gave the kid for Nike for the logo.
Is that right?
Yeah. It's something like $20 or something.
Oh, that's amazing.
But later on, they gave him stocks in the company.
Which was, so he's probably
like after the early stage.
Awesome,
so.
I love that. So Rich Dad Poor Dad, yeah, look, it's for me, it's a staple.
Read it at least every couple of years.
I was going to say, I need to go back and read it because it's presented so well. And what I like as well, in all honesty, is he does live what he preaches. And I think that's actually quite important. You know, there's lots of books and lots of fluff out there and lots of YouTube videos and Facebook ads of people that are sitting in Maseratis that they're renting and sitting in houses that they're renting, pretending that they're living this life, and it's bullshit. He's not actually. He's built this genuinely through the processes that he says, and he's built a very successful business. Now, you know, Phil's right. Always question these things. The book is what's made his money before anything else, but that's allowed him to live the life that he does actually preach. So I definitely, that's one to read. The final one on the list, and there's just one more, or we're going to have a chat about Grant Cardone after, I think, but is Principles, Ray Dalio.
Yeah, so I brought this up because it's become popular recently. He was in Tony Robbins' book, 7 Steps to Money Mastery or something like that, and he's released his own book, Principles. The thing that I wanted to highlight and pull apart is because it's getting a lot of coverage everywhere, and it's called the All-Weather Portfolio. So this guy has returned, I think, another double digits. It might be 16% over the last 30 years, which is a massive return. Yeah. But if you look at it, about 15, off the top of my head, I think it's about 15% of his portfolio is in fixed interest, which means it's generally cash or term deposits or government bonds.
Yeah, that's like low interest rates.
It is now. And this is the point. People, you know, it's been kind of irresponsible to go to this next level because when he was in managing money, it was the late 80s or early 90s. So it made sense for him to invest 15 to, it might even be 30%, it might have been 15 fixed cash and 15% bonds.
Yeah.
So I was 30% in these double-digit returning assets, like cash was returning back then probably 12, 13%, bonds were probably 8, 9%.
Yeah.
But people are talking about it now, and he's promoting it now as his all-weather portfolio, whereas if you're putting 30% of your funds at the moment in cash and bonds, you're getting 2% per year.
Yeah.
So I think, going that extra step, pushing that extra little bit further, because people come out, he's an authority, he's got the credentials, he's got the information to back it up.
Yeah.
So if you're an investor going, shit, maybe I should put 30% in fixed interest. It worked for him back in those times because interest rates were so massive.
Different
so that's why I wanted to kind of cover that. It's quite interesting read. He talks about his fund that he managed and that kind of concept, but I just wanted to bring that to highlight for.
And that's important. It's an important point. You know, we're not authorities in books. So there's lots, huge amount. God, you go to any bookshop, and there's just shelves and shelves filled with investing books of every type and hue. but you know, the reality is a lot of them. Yeah, it's hard. I mean, the person that's writing them obviously is writing them to make money from the book. But what they present may not be actually what's happened. And I think the big thing for me, definitely, as I was saying, is people that are writing about one thing they've done and actually they've made their money completely differently. And there's lots of that going on. And yeah, I mean, this sounds like one that this guy legitimately has made the money. But
he made the money.
You have to ask the question. And really, it's not, we're not going to preach to you, you know, what books to, we've just sort of, you know, we're not going to say this is the best book you should read. But the important thing is you go out and look yourself, but always question how these sort of books work, because there's nothing worse than reading through one of these things and then following a strategy you think is going to work and you end up, it fails and you go, oh, that's because of me. Well, no, actually, it's because a huge amount of this stuff is out of date. And I'll tell you the other example that, you know, we found, if you're ever looking at things like digital marketing training or anything, even investor training online, the amount of stuff you're watching, you're thinking, hold on, actually, is this right? Because stuff goes out of date so quickly, and someone might have been using a strategy 2 years ago that they're still selling as a strategy because they were successful then. Now, they're making their money by selling that strategy. They're not making their money using that strategy. And I think that's an important point to make. Yeah, definitely. Look, that's a really good selection of books. And the only other ones is a general thing on the Grant Cardone books.
Yeah.
And we've spoken before, we want to have a look at his real estate investing, which I think, did you get that actually?
I did. It was like a digital download, which means it's hard to kind of read.
Yeah, you'd almost need to print it out, or you like the audio, don't you? Yeah,
I could fork out and buy $90 for his book.
Yeah,
because by the time the conversion rate happens,
I know that was the problem. Yeah,
so shipping.
Grant Cardone, you may know him. A lot of people do who are in our area. If not, he's a incredibly successful. Actually, he was a salesman originally, Has a very interesting and varied sort of life story, but yeah, salesman, but he really jumped into property investing and really led the way with that. He now has a couple of very big funds. So Cardone Capital 4, I think it's up to now, where you as a normal, kind of, I think it's a minimum of like 5,000 or a couple of thousand US dollars, and you can invest in this fund, and he basically buys property and makes his money from there. But I mention him because he's a very sort of, his writing style, it's all very direct, and it literally is how he does it. So it's worth having a listen to. He's not so hot on investing in stocks, and we actually did a really good podcast, which is on the list, where we had a fireside chat with him, which was quite enlightening, but awesome to kind of just have a chat with him about it all. But there's a couple of books that he's released, but there is one about real estate investing, and it's a slight aside, but I just think we're talking again about, you know, just a kind of an holistic idea of investing. It's worth reading his stuff, because I just find his stuff is very direct. It's kind of easy to read because he's not so complicated. His brain isn't complicated. It's like, this is what I want to do. I made it happen. I did it. This is what happened. It's actually quite empowering when you're reading, because you're like, oh yeah, this guy sort of started from nothing. So he started originally with a single dwelling? I think it was like a single house.
Yeah.
Sold that, bought an apartment block, and then kind of went on from there. And he owns about 7,000 units in the US or something like that. But yeah, there was a kind of a random aside to throw in there.
Well, it's a good one though, because I've studied him relentlessly probably for the last, I mean, what is it, 4 years now?
Yeah.
4 or 5 years. Break his method down. It's increase your income, invest the difference, and invest it in income producing assets / real estate. That's the whole, everything he talks about. So whether he's doing his sales course, that's about increasing your income so that you can then invest it in assets. If he's talking about, you know, business, improving your business, or partnering with other people, again, it's about increasing your income. So they're the three things that he talks about. And a lot of people increase their income and then just increase their lifestyle.
Increase all the time.
Which is that's Cardone in a nutshell.
That's really good. So literally, don't worry about reading the book. Bill's just explained it. no, but it's true. And that's what we talk about as well. Investing isn't... like this whole idea that, you know, passive income, I know people like Gary Vaynerchuk make a point of saying there's no such thing as passive income. There is automated income, but, you know, we're not saying, hey, by tomorrow you're going to be living that laptop lifestyle. We're saying, right, let's build something with what you have. And so it doesn't matter if you've got $50, if you've got $50,000. The point is you've got money to invest. Don't spend it on random crap that you buy on bloody AliExpress or on, you know, wherever, JB Hi-Fi. Why not actually put that into something that will make you money? So, yeah, I think definitely. That's a good point, Phil. Grant Cardone stuff is worth listening to. all right, this is actually over the 30-minute, this one. It was really interesting. I've quite enjoyed going through all these books. What we'll do is we'll actually just link them all in the description. So if you want to check out any of these books, we'll just put links to where you can get them. No affiliate links or anything. We'll just throw in links there. So, yeah, if you want to pick up any of them. But thank you all for listening as always. We always say this, but don't forget to check us out. We're across the social media world-ish. Facebook, Cheeky Investor. We're at Instagram, Cheeky Investor. And our website, cheekyinvestor.com. If you're new to listening, thank you so much for joining us. And if you're a regular, thank you even more for continuing to listen. We really do appreciate it. And obviously, if you've got any questions, if you want any topics covered, get on to Facebook, drop us a line, and we'll do our best to help you out. Thank you again, and we'll catch you next time.